myself, David Fertig, attorneys Erica Curls and Kevin Fink. The other board members are Pete Bramson and Janice K. Bryant, Carol Spooner, George Barnstone, Teresa Allen, Rob Robinson. And we are now discussing Section 4, Article 6 of the bylaws.
Say that again. Section 4.
Article 6, Section 4.
Okay, thank you.
So the question then becomes one of whether there are any motions. I had made a motion to strike Section 4 based on the KPFK Advisory Board's determination that no at-large directors should be considered. That failed for lack of a second, unless someone would care to second it at this stage. However, failing that, then, is there a motion for any other modifications? And failing that, is there any other reason?
I'd like to discuss perhaps having the number limited. Is this the number of at-large directors limited?
It is limited.
Mine just says one or more. I'm sorry, I don't see where it's limited at on here.
It's limited because the number of directors is limited to a maximum of 23.
Okay, never mind.
So does that mean that there could be...
It could be up to three, it seems.
There could be one, two, or three.
Yeah, and this is Rob. I'd just like to mention that this is something that we debated not simply in drafting the individual station bylaws, but we debated it on the board on a number of occasions. There are a number of reasons why we might want to have people on the board who have expertise in, say, FCC law, fundraising and development, programming, and the board might want to avail itself of people with these skills. I understand that that these issues are going to continue to arise in this discussion, but we have discussed most of these things and voted on them with the board in the past. So, I just hope we can keep to a minimum revisiting issues that we've already resolved in straw poll votes.
I agree. I think, though, anyone representing any other interests themselves or the lab, what have you, should be able to make whatever adjustments seem necessary. But I agree.
I understand that, but the point that I'm trying to make is that we've got a process which allowed all of the signal areas to draft bylaws and participate in this process. The board has discussed these on numerous occasions and, you know, debated the wisdom of this. We're not disrespecting the desire of individual stations to take certain positions on the bylaws, but, you know, in many cases, the board has gone to great lengths to debate these things and to make decisions.
They've all been done openly. Okay, are there any motions
relative
to Section 4, Sub A or B? I'm sorry? Hearing none, is there any further discussion or any concerns relative to the wording in either of these sections? Hearing none, then let's proceed.
Let's move on.
Okay.
Erica and Kevin,
sure.
Next, I guess,
from
5.
Yes, we're moving on now to page 22, section 5 of Article 6. Similar until we did under Article 5, dealing with the transition elections for the local station boards, we also wanted to put in a provision to deal with transition elections this year from the interim board to a full new board of directors. And so what we did was using language quite similar, I think, to what was Section 7 of Article 5, just reiterated the board's ability, the current board's ability to establish a time frame by which to schedule elections for local station boards as well as elections for all of your replacements. And then to address the issue of staggered terms, which in light of the wording we're using for candidates would need to be actually changed to reflect that the director from each local station board that receives the highest ranked votes would serve until March 2006. The two directors that receive the highest ranked votes after the highest person would serve until March 2005, and the fourth director elected from each local station board who had the lowest number or the lowest rank of the four would serve until March 2004.
Okay, does anybody have any motions or concerns relative to language, timing, or construct of Article 6, Section 5, addressing transitional elections? Going once? Going twice? Okay. Let's move on then.
Moving on, Section 6 is the same as previously. Section 7 has been revised to address the issue of removal of directors. The new language predominantly appears in Section 7, Item E, that clarifies how the at-large directors would be removed. And then there's an additional Item F that just clarifies that upon the expiration of a director's term as a delegate, that they would automatically be removed as a director as well.
Are there any motions relating to Article 6, Section 7? Hearing none, I will note that the KPFA Local Advisory Board has also moved to modify Article 6, Section 7, Subsection D.
Subsection D.
Subsection D, which states that the removal of directors may be done upon the fair and reasonable determination by two-thirds vote of the board, excluding the vote of the director in question. After review of the facts
the
in its sole discretion, the said director has exhibited conduct that is adverse to the best interests of the foundation. What the two issues that the KPFK Lab sought to alter are, A, the vote required, that is, that it be 75% vote of the board as opposed to a 66% vote of the board, or two-thirds. And secondly, now there's the issue of adding...
I'm sorry, David. Dave.
Yes.
You're giving completely new information and you're reading it to us. We don't have it in writing.
I'm sorry. The only alterations of Section 7 sub D that KPFK would seek would be to change it from two-thirds to three-quarters.
Two-thirds to now three-quarters.
That to ensure, again, that there is a provision of due process and the opportunity to go on air to defend against charges.
So this would be for the National Board removing one of its members?
Correct.
By three-quarters vote with notice and opportunity to be heard. Are you making a motion?
That's the motion from the KPFK Local Advisory.
Okay, but let me see if I understand this correctly. KPFK Local Advisory Board thinks that if National Board people want to remove one of their members among themselves, it now has to be three-quarters of them. They have to have due process, and they want the person to be able to go on the air and defend themselves.
There's
That's
nothing
correct.
About the air there, is there?
Correct.
Tell me again why they feel that what we've got is not, you know, not due process?
The concern stated is based, first of all, the due process issue and being able to go on air to defend, I think, is relatively obvious. And I think that... if there's a feeling, there's a concern and a lingering distrust. Are we surprised? A lingering distrust that a majority of the board might be wielded to prevail over a minority of the board to once again take the foundation away from the mission, and that the supermajority vote it was deemed essential to ensure the sanctity of minority perspectives on the national board.
Mm-hmm.
The process issue, I think, is straightforward. And we did discuss that as to Article 4, Section 9, I believe, last time. That's the motion on the table, 75% due process and on air. Is there a second to that motion?
No, but I would,
I'm just
there is none. Why don't we just keep going?
Well, we did put due process language in the other one, notice and opportunity to be heard.
And that should be at least consistent at Section 7. Is there an agreement to that? That
yeah.
The notice and due process provisions provided at the local level should also
I'll second it.
Level?
I'll second it so we can have this discussion.
Well, we don't have a lot of time.
Relative to notice due process on air provision.
But we're not changing two-thirds to three-quarters.
Well,
I'm separating the two issues.
Okay.
I'll bifurcate the motion, and I will move...
Go ahead, bifurcate.
We'll move... Hey, don't talk like that. I will move the modification of Section 7 to provide that under Sub D, that the two-thirds be changed to three, I'm sorry, never mind, that we provide under Section 7 that there be due process and that the member being charged have the opportunity to go on air and defend.
Okay. I would like to ask Kevin Fink. Kevin, what do you think of this?
Well, I like the due process. It seems like a very high percentage. I think, you know.
Okay, we're taking the percentage issue away for the moment.
Okay, but the due process, I think we should do it for consistency purposes.
I'm opposed to on-air for the same reasons I opposed it before.
Because it's
boring. There could be something that is so damaging to some third party or to the foundation that confidential. That putting it on the air could expose us to slander suits and all kinds of nastiness. I don't think that those sorts of things necessarily should be on the air.
But the language we came up with before did not require to go on air.
Right.
Right.
So I'd like to be consistent.
The language we used in the past, in the event of removal proceeding, the delegate will be afforded a reasonable and appropriate due process according to the circumstances, including notice and an opportunity to be heard.
Yeah.
That's under D, yeah. Article 4, Section 9, sub D.
Right.
So is there any objection to having that consistent language in
no.
Article
no.
6?
No.
No.
Section 7? No objection?
Okay. All right. Let me speak to the other issue.
Hold on a second. Okay. So is Article 6, Section 7 has the same language? Did you get that, Carol?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Please go ahead. Teresa?
Okay. I have taken some heat about my vote the other day. I have taken some heat because I voted for 3-year terms of national board members.
Well, I sure hope you don't change.
Okay.
You're a crazy loudmouth. Come
well,
on,
but,
Teresa.
I'm sorry that I haven't had an opportunity for more discussions with more people on this. And I feel real concerned because the impression I'm given is that some people feel that this is an exalted process by which, I mean, I told people that the direction that I was given from the judge was that the national board is to create the bylaws in consultation with the listening community. But I've been told that no, really, it's the listening community creates the bylaws in consultation with the national board. So I'm somewhat conflicted because I feel that my fiduciary duty as a national board member is really to look at the whole picture. And I felt that maybe what people were trying to do in this process was just get me to rubber stamp things, and that once we, I mean, that really I didn't have any decision making in this. So I was told that making the terms of national board members only 1 year would cause the local boards to be less apt to try to recall someone. Now, I think that with local people on the national board that we do have the power to recall, but do you think that we don't have enough power to recall someone if they are sufficiently, you know, need to be removed?
Well, if I could say a few words about this, I think that a recall, say the local board wants to recall their director, a recall is a very unpleasant and obnoxious and destabilizing and polarizing event that I would hope would never occur. Somebody would have to be, you know, consistently just way off base for their local board to want to recall them.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, that if somebody is consistently off base, as provided here in the bylaws, they can be recalled. I think one thing that would help to avoid that ever happening would be to shorten the term to 1 year. That way the local board would be reevaluating their director every year. And those that are doing a great job would just be reelected, and those that weren't would not be, without the pain and suffering that happens around a recall.
Okay, so
but the idea of having a one-year, I mean, listen, y'all, by your own experience of how we're working well, much better now than we were a year ago, and for those of you who have experience on boards, I'm not sure how many of you do. One-year terms is unreasonable. You don't have, people have to have a chance to get their sea legs, and you know that. I mean, by your own experience.
I agree, George.
I agree. I do agree, but I think most board members would be reelected for a second term.
So, in essence, is this discussion to revisit the terms again?
No, I hope
all right,
not.
Let's just go on then.
I'm sorry, Teresa. I understand your position, but I really think that if we vote, well, this is ridiculous.
Okay.
Article 6, Section 2, term as a director. There was a motion to change from maximum of 2 3-year terms to a maximum of 5 1-year terms.
No.
Voting against. Excuse me, voting against it was board members Barnstone, Bryant, LaForest, and O'Robinson. Any of those who voted no may now make a motion to reconsider. Teresa Allen was absent for that vote. Voting yes was myself, Carol Spooner, and Pete Bramson. So of those four, Barnstone, Bryant, LaForest, and Robinson, any of the three of you of that group who are now present may make a motion to reconsider. Do either of you do so?
I would like to make a motion to have a new chair, because we've already revisited this, wasting our time.
It really is.
I would like to make a motion to have a new chair.
Teresa, you want to challenge my ruling to hold a motion?
Teresa hasn't made a motion. If she wants to, she can.
What are we talking about?
How are we getting a new chair?
The motion to reconsider the vote previously taken may only be made by a person who voted for the winning prevailing side. That is not occurring, therefore there's no motion to alter Article 6, Section 2. Therefore, we got to move forward.
That's all right.
That's my ruling.
You're right.
The issue of three-quarters going from 66 to 75%. That's a motion relative to Section 7, Sub D, brought by the KPFK Local Advisory Board. Is there a second? Hearing none, let's proceed, please. Devin and Erica?
Absolutely. our next set of comes under Article 7.
Someone joined us, I think.
Jabari.
Hey,
hi, Jabari.
Hey, Jabari.
I know.
It's good to see you, man.
All right, sorry to interrupt. Just wanted.
We're on page 23, Article 7, Section 1. The only change there was to add that the board would regularly meet in June, September, and January, whereas previously it said May and September.
Say that again.
Sure. Previously, the Section 1 indicated that the board would meet regularly once in March, and then again in May and September, and then any other time it deemed appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
We were asked to amend to show that the board would meet in March, in June, September, and January.
All right. I have an issue here. We went back and forth between 3 and 4 meetings during the year. I want to point out that the National, going back as long as the minutes that I've read, which goes back to 1980 or so, met only 3 times a year.
Yes.
Not 4. These meetings are tremendously expensive. And I'm wondering if we need to meet, since we can call special meetings if necessary, if having 4 meetings is really in the best interest of the foundation, particularly considering the expense. I think we do need to meet in September, because that's when the board approves the budget for the coming year. I think we do need to, historically the board met in September, January or
March
February.
And June.
January, March, and June?
Well, it's recently been either March, February, March, June, and September.
Right. Well, I wanted to make a proposal about that. And that is that I think we have to meet in September, and that we should meet in June, because June would be the beginning of looking at the preliminary budget and getting everybody oriented to adopting a budget in September. And I would like to propose that the third meeting be in January, right after the local boards have been elected, so that the new national board would be seated the next month. And
what are the 3 months you're recommending, Cheryl? What are the 3 months you're recommending?
June, September, January, right?
June, September, and January. February is fund drive month. Putting it off to March is really a long time to wait between the election of the new LSB and the election of the new directors, and it creates some out-of-sync time where, you know, there's a long wait for the local boards to get their new directors on. So that's my proposal, and I wonder how other people feel about it.
So you're wanting to go from four meetings a year to three?
Yes.
Well, what you were saying is we've been in a process where we had three meetings a year. She's really just rearranging the meeting in the wintertime and putting it in January rather than in March.
But she also wants to eliminate a meeting.
Well,
but traditionally, it's not been four meetings a year.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I disagree. Carol, I disagree with your idea, your motion, because that further just makes us into five separate stations with a very weak network presence.
Well, Carol, so your motion is to make them June, September, and January. Is that correct?
Right. Is there a second?
Yes, Pete.
And Pete seconds it? Okay. I'm sorry, George. I interrupted you, but you were making a point.
And it, as I said, I mean, that moves us further towards just having five separate stations with very little weak network, weak network presence. And that I don't believe any of us, in truth, really want that. We want to see our beautiful, precious network grow and reach more people so we can affect a greater change.
Anyone else have comments on this motion?
I'm not clear why George thinks the three rather than four meetings weakens the network.
Because, thank you. Because when you have fewer and fewer meetings, you have less of a body working together, as that is the board. And you know, why have three meetings? Why only have one? Why not have only one meeting a year? At that point, I mean, you know, where do you draw the line?
Could we say that we're going to have three and another if necessary?
Well, there's a provision for special meetings for at any time that anybody feels somebody is needed.
Any other comments? No, I'll weigh in on this. I think that if we look at the cost of these meetings, which are approximately $30,000 a pop in terms of cash, there are other costs, certainly, in terms of programming time set aside, staff distraction, the work involved, you know, staff allocation. But even if we double that then to $60,000 per, that works out to about 1% of, maybe a little over 1% of our annual national budget. That's approximately $12 million. You know, I think that the benefit of the meeting, I agree with George, the notion of having all five stations physically come together with the staff and the you know, general managers and the program directors and the national staff and the archive staff and the board members coming together, meeting and discussing what's going on, having the face-to-face communication. It invigorates a lot of things. I think even in almost a spiritual sense, getting people in the same room and having them get together, as well as showing nationally that we have that cohesion nationally and that we develop that cohesion nationally by doing it. I think it's worth the investment, both time and the really comparatively scant proportion of the annual budget. Further, it creates an opportunity in each signal area as we rotate around the nation and the five signal areas to give people an opportunity to both see the board in action and for the board to see the listeners in action. I think it's a vital and helpful thing. I don't think going from four to three is sufficient financial and time saving to offset the loss of benefit that we get from missing that fourth meeting. I think we should stay with four meetings.
Can we call the question?
Yes, please.
Okay. The motion is to change it from from four to three. The meetings would be in January, June, and September. Vote yes is to change it from four to three. Pete Bramson.
Yes.
Janice.
Did you say Janice?
Yes.
No.
Carol.
Yes.
I'll vote no. George.
No.
Teresa. Teresa.
No.
Bob.
No.
And Jabari.
No.
Okay, the motion fails. The next issue, I mean, that was Article 7, Section 1.
Did we need to vote on the changing from what Erica just said to these different months?
Is there any objection to March, June, September, and January?
No.
No.
So hearing no proposed modifications, let's proceed.
Okay. The next changes will occur on page 24 of the clean version of the draft under telephonic meetings.
And this is Article
7,
Section
3, telephonic meetings.
Okay.
The changes here will reflect that the telephonic meetings can only be held with regards to special meetings and not for regular meetings, and that a telephone appearance at meetings scheduled as a quote-unquote in-person meeting will not be permitted.
Say that one more time, the last phrase.
Sure. I was asked to clarify that if you guys are having an in-person meeting, which would be any of the four meetings set forth in Section 1 above, that all parties would have to attend in person and not be permitted to attend by telephone.
Any objection?
Any objection? Any motion to change? Are you hearing none? Let's proceed.
The next change occurs on Section 5 of Article 7, page 24 of your clean version. We changed the word 51% to a majority and added a sentence consistent with the approval by delegates to provide that except as otherwise provided herein, the approval of a majority of the board present in voting shall be required for any action of the board.
A quorum at any meeting of the board of directors shall... The way I'm reading it here,
mm-hmm.
Erica, is the way you feel it should be.
The way that we're reading it here is how it should be.
Okay.
Any objection? Any motions?
This is Pete. Out of clarification, am I hearing that 51% is being included instead of the word majority?
No, it's the opposite. Prior to that, it was 51%, and we were requested to put it as majority, which
you.
Is fine.
Thank you.
Yeah, because otherwise everyone's got their calculators out. Okay.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay, moving on.
Section 6 proxy.
Yeah, Section 6 proxy, we've left it as is.
All permits that is from board and director level, correct?
Yes.
Okay,
all right, there's a request for the last sentence of that. It says from the KPFA lab.
On Section 6?
Yeah.
Okay.
Section 7, open meeting.
Okay.
Oh, we're not there yet, sorry.
Well,
hearing no objection to the prior section, I think we are.
Are we?
Yes.
Okay, the last sentence says the board will use reasonable efforts to broadcast or webcast
mm-hmm.
or telephonic meetings. The request is that we change that to shall broadcast or webcast.
Shall
we're required to under the CPB rules hold open meetings. The request is that say we shall do it.
Bye instead bye. Of using reasonable efforts?
Right.
The board shall broadcast. Period.
Yeah, the board shall broadcast or webcast its telephonic meeting.
So if for example, let's say we're in a meeting and there's a sunspot, and telecommunications go down, the meeting should be canceled because of the lack of ability to broadcast it?
Or it would be suspended?
Yeah.
So the motion to alter the phrase at the bottom of Section 7, change the word, change the wording from what to what, Carol? The board will use reasonable efforts.
Reasonable efforts.
Shall broadcast.
Shall.
Change
we're
the
required
we'll
to
use
have
reasonable
open
efforts.
Meetings.
The word
this
shall.
Addresses it. Doesn't tells us we're going to.
Yes, the motion is our second.
Second.
Seconded by Steve.
Yes.
Mr. Fink, what do you think of that?
Well, as we've discussed this before, there are going to be certain situations where the board is going to want to take action without it being public.
Yeah, we have a... I'm sorry.
Separate.
Okay, and we try to address that in the first part of Section 7. So I'm concerned that if we take the language as proposed, we're to some extent developing an inconsistency in the paragraph.
I thought this was just referring to open meetings. I thought closed meetings were closed meetings, and that we're entitled to have those.
Well, the last sentence doesn't say open or closed meetings. It's just
all right. So
maybe that's what we need to do.
Maybe what we should say is that the
open
board
meetings.
Shall broadcast or webcast
it's
all
open.
Its open telephonic meetings.
Well, the term public meeting, I think, was used earlier in the section.
Mm-hmm.
All public meetings of the board, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So you use the word public meetings, I think, would characterize those meetings which are not closed for
For consistency.
So then, am I correct, Carol, that your motion is to change so it would read, the board shall broadcast or webcast its public telephonic meetings?
Yes. Pete,
that's the motion. Is the second still stand, Peter?
Yes, it does.
How does Kevin feel about that?
Well, I think there's degrees of having meetings open to the public. I mean, you know, I understand how there's a large contingency in the board who likes to have public meetings be public by way of a broadcast rather than them just being open for visitation. So I really think that's more of almost a business decision than a legal decision for the board to decide how they feel.
Okay, thank you.
Nobody can visit us when we're on the phone.
May I offer a motion to bifurcate the issue, or can we say by acclamation that we should insert the word public between the words it and telephonic?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
On Section 7, is there any objection to that? Hearing no objection, the word public is inserted after the word it and before the word telephonic in Section 7 at the bottom. The remaining issue then is to change will use reasonable efforts to the word shall under Carol's motion. And that's the motion before us. Any further comment on that motion?
Yeah, I have a comment.
All right.
I think it should just stay the same because shall, from a legalistic term, means that you are required to do it. I don't think we need to do hamstring the board and to be requiring to do things that need to be done. I think there needs to be a sense of trust that when the board meets, they'll make every necessary effort to hold the meeting so that people can hear what's going on, but in cases where that may not be possible, it may not be feasible within a certain time span, the meetings still need to go on, and there will be reports of meetings coming out anyway. So it's not like if people aren't there at the time it's happening, they will not know what's going on.
I'd like to point out that there was a complaint filed with the CPB in 1996 by members of the public, and that a lengthy CPB investigation of closed meetings followed that took a lot of time and effort and attorney's time and appearing at hearings and so forth. And I really don't think we should leave ourselves wiggle room here. We should comply with the CPB requirements and just make it clear that we will.
But we're not under any obligation to take CBB funding. That's a political choice. I think the issue is how do we run the foundation and do we hamstring ourselves, make it so onerous that we cannot really conduct business because of certain artificial requirements. I don't think we need to be putting artificial requirements on the board. The board, if it needs to act, needs to act and needs to be able to act precipitously if required. And, like, again, I think reports of meetings will be coming out anyway, so I don't think it really makes that much difference because the public won't have an effect on
Well,
me.
I'm going to use my newly acquired Robert's Rules of Order. Can I call the question so we can get to a vote?
The question has been called. Is there any objection to the calling of the question?
No.
Hearing no objection, we will proceed to the question. The motion being the board changing the word, will use reasonable efforts to the word shall. And we'll proceed to the vote. Vote yes means to make the alteration. Pete?
Yes.
Anna?
Yes.
Carol?
Yes.
I vote no. George?
No.
Teresa?
Yes.
Bob?
No.
Jabari?
No.
The motion is tied. It fails.
Okay,
the next, please.
Sure. The next section, Section 8, there's just one change that we need to make. It's in the middle of that paragraph that references Section 10 of Article 5, and that should actually reference Article 6. Other than that, Section 8 and Section 9 are the same as they were previously.
KPFA Lab requests we modify accessibility Section 9 to leave off the...
We're on Section 8. Section 8. Is there any questions about Section 8? Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you, Carl.
Section 8, accessibility, KPFA Lab requests that we drop off the reasonable efforts will be made to hold and begin the sentence with all public board meetings shall be in spaces. Fully accessible is defined in the ADA. I'm informed that the ADA does have exceptions under emergency situations, and that KPFA Lab believes those are adequate. Any second to that motion?
Excuse me, can you just direct me to exactly what where we are?
Yeah, we're in Article 7, Section 9, Accessibility.
Page 25 of your clean version of the second draft of the
Article panel. 7, Article 7,
mm-hmm.
Section 9.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is there a second to that motion?
Second. Isn't seconded by Pete? Any discussion?
Yes, I would like to speak to this. We in Houston are making all reasonable efforts to hold our meetings in spaces fully accessible. However, if we even open up the subject of a handicap ramp, there's a possibility that everything in our building that might not be under, you know, properly coded makes us vulnerable.
Mm.
And I think that we should continue to say reasonable effort because I happen to think we're reasonable. So I don't immediately want to be able to say we can't have any meetings in our building.
This is a board meeting, national board meeting.
National board meeting.
Yeah, your space there isn't big enough for a national board meeting.
Okay.
This said all public meetings, what I'm looking at.
Well, you must be looking at, are you looking at the clean version?
It will be made to hold all public
board
meetings.
Okay.
All public.
That says all public board meetings.
In spaces.
No problem then.
So what's a board meeting?
It's when we go and rent a hotel and hire a ballroom and hold.
And I happen to have the handicap accessible space that I'm in right now.
No, I mean, is it a committee of the board? Is that a board meeting?
No, it says a board meeting.
Okay,
I'm asking that question. That's what I'm trying to get clear.
Oh, okay.
Is a committee meeting a board meeting?
No, it's not.
Okay, this is a regularly scheduled PNB meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be better for you, Jabari, if it said public national board meetings? Would that help?
Well, actually, I wouldn't even have this section in the bylaws, so it's. I think it's superfluous.
Well, we approved it once before.
I understand. I still think it's superfluous, and you're opening up yourself for stuff that you don't need to open up yourself for.
This is Kevin Fink. I'd like to make one quick observation.
Yes.
Whenever you go beyond reasonable efforts to a definitive statement, you shall... You're really putting the board in a position where you're...
Open up with lawsuits.
Increasing their exposure to lawsuits.
Yeah.
And, you know, that should be factored in deciding how you want to go forward.
Okay.
Any other
comment? Question?
Well, I would like to comment on this. I feel very, very strongly about accessibility issues. And I refuse to attend a meeting that is not in an accessible space unless it's an emergency and virtually and literally nobody needs access to it, as provided in the... last sentence here that of Section 9, but I think that to make it mandatory does put constraints upon us that if we do fail, I would object mightily, but I wouldn't want us to get sued for it. I would rather we be able to handle it internally instead of through the courts. I agree that to put mandatory language in that section, just as I frankly felt relative to the prior section, put mandatory language upon ourselves while it gives the listeners the opportunity to sue us to make sure we follow the law, I believe that the bylaws give listeners ample recourse to ensure we follow the law without us having hauled ourselves into court. So I would oppose the mandatory language. Is there any other comments?
No.
Okay. Okay, so the proposal, as I understand it, by Carol Spooner, seconded by Pete Bramson, is to remove the phrase, reasonable efforts will be made to and add, so it would read, all public board meetings shall be held in spaces fully accessible, etc. Correct?
Yes.
Okay, a vote yes means to change it to the mandatory language. Pete?
Yes.
Carol? I'm sorry, Janet?
No.
Carol?
Yes.
Oh, no. George?
No.
Lisa?
No.
Bob?
No.
Sorry?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Dave, did you vote?
7, section 9.
He voted no.
Boom.
I'm sorry, wait a second. Did I miss somebody?
No, yourself.
I voted no. Okay.
Excuse me, just for clarification. On that section where the last sentence says properly closed sections, where if we're talking about board members, then I mean board meetings, there are no properly closed board meetings. Am I correct?
No, yes, there are.
Of course.
Yeah, we have the out of anything that requires advice of counsel is proprietary information.
Okay, but that was then that question. See, I asked first, mm-hmm. What is a board meeting? And you're saying like the regular PNB meetings. Well, the regular PNB meetings aren't closed meetings.
That's right.
So this last sentence here isn't obviously dealing with regular board meetings.
Well, it is possible.
Regular closed sessions can occur in a regular meeting.
Erica, do you want to just clarify what this is?
I was actually just going to say what Dave said, which is that even if you have a regularly scheduled meeting, you may have items in the meeting which are held under a closed session because they deal with personnel, proprietary information, litigation, or some other type of confidential information. So it is possible to have a closed session in a regularly scheduled board meeting.
Okay, as long as I know what you're talking about, that's all.
Okay, next.
We now move on to Article 8, Section 1, Committees of the Board. This section was just revised, the very first paragraph, to make it clear that committees can only have the authorities and powers set forth in the resolution of the board which created them, and that they can't have exercise any of the powers listed in subsections A through H without full board review and approval. The only changes you're going to notice between the last draft and this draft in the subsections A through H would be under subsection F. Since we were asked to indicate that all local station boards were standing committees of the national board, we needed to put in a caveat under subsection F that only local station boards have the authority to create committees under those terms set forth in Article 4, which dealt with the ability of local station boards to create advisory committees. If you then go down further into the big paragraph that's under the subsection H, this section just sets forth the number of delegates and directors which have to sit on any committee of the board as that information was given to us via the straw. Straw poll votes.
What does Kevin Singh think of this? Kevin?
Oh. Kevin or Erica?
Oh, Erica, what do you think?
As to which section?
What do you think of our... Well, this sounds rather, what'd you say, it's rather intricate?
Intricate?
Yeah.
Well, the sections A through H, frankly, are consistent with California law, so we thought it was important to leave them in there to make it very clear what committees cannot do without the approval of the board.
Yes.
The other part, which begins with, you know, except as otherwise provided in the bylaws, you know, all committees shall include at least one director. Those things are really kind of business decisions as to how you want to structure your participation on committees.
Mm-hmm. It's consistent with our straw poll votes. I have one question about subdivision E.
Yes.
It says, amend or repeal any resolution of the board which by its express terms is not so amendable or repealable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not clear why the which by its express terms is not so amendable or repealable. Would a committee ever have the authority to amend or repeal any resolution of the full board in any case? Is the question.
You know, I think it would turn on what the terms of the resolution were, which created a committee in the beginning. So, you know, in the absence of kind of knowing that, it would be hard to say yay or nay.
Carol, I think you're saying it's surplus thought.
Yeah, I mean, if you have an establishing resolution, I can't imagine us establishing a resolution that would give a committee the power to overrule the full board.
Unless it was an executive committee that wanted to try to do that.
Yeah, but we don't want that.
Right.
Are you suggesting that that
I'm
be...
I'm suggesting that we stop with amend or repeal any resolution of the board. Just terminate this.
Oh, okay.
So there's a motion to alter Article 8, Section 1, Sub E... to only include the first phrase, amend, or, you know, so it would effectively mean that no committee may, without full board review and approval, amend or repeal any resolution of the board.
Is there any objection to that?
Any objection? Hearing no objection, it's the modification accepted by acclamation. Next.
Are there any other questions or comments on that section one? We then added Section 2. We were given a list of standing committees, which the board wanted to create, as well as a definition of them. The committees we created pursuant to that information were a coordinating committee, a governance committee, a technology committee, a programming committee, a finance committee, and a audit committee.
We talked about this a little bit at the last meeting relative whether or not we wanted to have an election committee. That's even a diversity committee.
Yeah. I think we're going to have an elections committee. And when we talk about the diversity issue, which we really need to rush through this to get so we can have a full discussion of it, we're going to have to talk about establishing a diversity committee or something.
Well, my hearing...
Is there any motion to modify Article 8, Section 2?
How about after D, Programming Committee?
Mm-hmm.
E, Finance Committee. F, Audit Committee. Put in a G, Elections Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Which shall oversee the annual elections of delegates and board members.
Now, how would the elections committee interact with the national election supervisor and the local election supervisor?
We'd develop some policies about how to do that.
Okay.
Outside the bylaws, is my suggestion.
Okay, what's the language again? Which shall oversee annual elections of delegates?
And board members and directors. For instance, they would be the ones that would go out and find the election supervisor, interview, and make sure they're qualified and recommend them. That kind of thing.
Is there a second to that motion? Hearing no second.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, I'll second it. This is Pete.
Okay. Sorry.
The motion is seconded. Any discussion?
I'm concerned about the word annual. Did we not, as a national board...
Mm.
Vote that we would have elections out of every 3 years.
Yeah, let's start that. Which shall oversee election of delegates and directors?
Okay, I have a comment. Is there any other discussion?
I just wonder, when you say a standing committee, is that making any kind of restraints or doing anything onerous to the national board?
It means we have more committees that will be ongoing.
Okay, any other comments before I make mine?
On the election committee part, you mean, David?
Bob, yes. On this motion to add a standing elections committee, which I'll oversee election supervisor.
I have a question. We have an affiliates committee right now. Is that just not a standing committee?
It's a standing committee. Any other committee may be developed by the board.
Okay.
This is Jabbar. I don't think if elections are going to be, very sporadic in time, they don't need to be standing committees. That could be just another committee. But the more standing committees, that means the more people have to be divided into doing work.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the work that this standing committee on an ongoing basis would need to do? So I don't see a need for it to be under a standing committee.
Any other discussion before I make my comment?
Well, I would think that it would be helpful to have a standing committee on elections so there's some consistency among the five stations as to how their elections are held. And we discussed this at our last telephone conference pretty much at length. It kept cropping up that we might need an elections coordinator. And I'm sorry to say, Carol, maybe you can help me with this.
Yeah, it's in the bylaws here that we have a national election supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
We changed the name from coordinator to supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
Who oversees local election supervisors. And this elections committee, as I imagine it, would be the committee that would work with the national election supervisor, hire or recommend who that would be, and make sure that all of our policies about elections are consistent.
If there is not an elections committee, to whom would that national election supervisor report?
I
think to the board.
To the full board.
Any other comments?
Yeah, this is Rob. Isn't it conceivable that after you've promulgated, all of the policies and regulations for elections, and you have a supervisor, that those things can be can fall under the purview of the governance committee?
Sure.
I mean, there might be a reason to have a committee for a year or two until you establish the elections process as part of your culture, and I think the same thing is true of diversity, although diversity could be more difficult to,
mm-hmm.
could require more work. But it's conceivable that once you have regulations and a process in place, that those things can simply be part of, something that's in writing,
mm-hmm.
that parallels the bylaws, that those things can be done as part of a governance committee.
Well, until that point comes, Rob, what would you suggest then? That you don't see the need for a standing committee? Could just be a committee that we establish?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that it's kind of a political decision. It seems to me that it would be ideal in the long run not to have, 10 standing committees for the board.
Mm-hmm.
But if we have to have in the bylaws now that there's going to be an elections committee and a diversity committee to make clear that we're committed to a process, that's fine. But when we revisit this in the bylaws, it would seem to me that it would help streamline the ability of the board to do its business if it doesn't have to operate so many committees, as Jabbari points out.
Mm-hmm.
Every committee you've got, you have to staff it with people. They're separate activities, and the more things we commit ourselves to do that we can't do, the more we venture into the area of becoming derelict.
Well, Pete seconded my motion, but I'm willing to withdraw the motion and with the understanding that the elections committee would be an ad hoc committee that would be set up around elections time.
Are you willing to withdraw your second?
Yes.
Okay, the motion is withdrawn. Any other motions relating to Article 8, Section 2, Standing Committee.
Yeah, I have a question. Isn't the coordinating committee the same thing as an executive committee?
When we talked about this at the board meeting,
mm-hmm.
what we were very clear about was sphere of executive committees with acting with the full authority of the board. And so, first of all, there was an objection to the name executive committee
mm-hmm.
because of the implications. that it could execute things. And so the...
execute a good word.
People, wait a
minute. Things and people. And the second... So it changed the coordinating committee. And its duty is, if something comes up between meetings, to farm it out to the appropriate committee or call a special board meeting, you know, just make sure that the board is functioning and coordinating that in between meetings.
Well, we've done well this year without a coordinating or executive committee, haven't we?
Well, Leslie, as chair, said she didn't think so. She felt quite handicapped by not having a group that she should consult before something or other. She felt that the board was quite handicapped by not having some coordinating committee, that too much of it fell on her, both the blame and the responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And that no matter what, she's going to end up consulting with somebody anyway.
Right, so this would formalize who she should consult with.
Well, didn't we have the problem, wasn't part of the problem with the previous board that they were having executive meetings without the knowledge of anyone else? Didn't that create really hard feelings?
Yes.
Rob, I think I have a few words on that.
Well, this board, this coordinating committee can't do that, and it also doesn't have the authority to act with the full authority of the board. But it is, in Leslie's absence, I want to speak for her, mm-hmm. because she did speak strongly about the need of not leaving the chair isolated to hear about something and figure out what to do, that there should be a coordinating committee.
Was there a straw poll on it, though, Carol?
That's yes. Yeah, there was.
And it was that we have it.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I don't want to revisit it. If we voted that way, let's just carry on.
Okay, now I'm going to say there's a motion on the table. There is a motion from the KPFK left to eliminate the coordinating committee because it was perceived that the coordinating committee would actually function as an executive committee, and there was a great hostility to the idea of an executive committee from the KPFK Local Advisory Board. And thus, there is a motion from the KPFK Local Advisory Board to eliminate the coordinating committee. However, I would take it upon myself to modify that motion to insert instead language to the effect that the coordinating committee is not an executive committee and may not exercise the powers of the board without the board's approval.
Well, I mean, we've already got here. No committee shall act with a full authority as a board. We went over that section already.
So no, you don't have to say it. It already exists.
It's redundant, yeah.
As long as it didn't mean do anything, I don't care. But I'm with them about being not wanting any executive committee. But since this one can't do anything.
My question is,
what's the point of having it? But anyway.
Where does it say what you just quoted?
It says under committees of the board of directors by resolution shall designate, any such committee shall have only such authority as provided by resolution of the board, and no committee of the board may, without full board review and approval, do anything.
No, that's not true. It says you cannot approve anything which requires approval of the members or the delegates, fill vacancies, fix compensation, amend or repeal, bylaws.
I'm sorry, where are you all reading from?
I'm at section one. Any such committee, board of directors may by resolution designate one or more committees to serve as the pleasure of the board. All right, well, maybe it doesn't really cover it.
You're in section one of what?
Yeah, of the same committees of the boards, Article 8.
Hmm.
Okay, Dave, why don't you...
My motion is that the coordinating committee is, we add the language, the coordinating committee is not an executive committee and may not exercise the powers of the board without board approval.
Okay.
That's the motion. Is there a second?
I second it.
Thank you, John. I finally got something seconded. Boy, I feel so much better now. thank you. Okay, so that's the motion on the table. Is there any discussion? As indicated before, the concern of the KPFK Local Advisory Board is that, as previously occurred, as Rob is well familiar with, because he did heroic efforts, as did other board members, to call attention to the fact that the executive board previously had run away with the spoon, withholding meetings without notice and making profound executive decisions affecting the foundation without notice, without due process, or without any sunlight. Therefore, the motion to either eliminate a coordinating board or committee, or actually to ensure that there are constraints upon it so they may not act as a traditional executive committee. Thus, that the language added to sub A of Section 2 of Article 8 to read, the coordinating committee is not an executive committee. It may not exercise powers of the board without board approval.
Okay.
Is moved to be inserted. Is there any further discussion?
I would like to ask Kevin Fink's opinion of this, or Erica.
I don't see a problem with it one way or the other. From a legal perspective, I think it's a business decision. Erica, what do you think?
I don't see a problem with it either, but I think because there have been problems in the past that, you know, it's a clarification which couldn't hurt.
Okay, so Article 8,
I have a question.
The motion is on the table. Those voting yes.
Oh, excuse me. I have a comment.
Sorry. Thank you, Jabari.
Okay. I think one of the things that I would like to see the bylaws become are short and concise.
Too late.
Yep.
Hey, we did take
Sub
E. That was good.
And though I will have to live in another universe, I will at least I will at least
be on record
as stating that I think these kinds of superfluous, non-essential inclusions of language based on fear and paranoia is not something that we should bless as a national board. I think the bylaws need to be, as you know, to whatever extent we can try to make them, just be short and sweet and to the point. And to the extent that this isn't necessary, I don't think it's necessary. I think both the attorneys stated that it doesn't make any difference. Then if it doesn't make any difference, it shouldn't be in there.
Jabbar, has anybody ever called you linear?
Okay, I'd like to
I've been called many things. I've probably been called that. I don't write out everything I've been called.
Back in this universe now, the motion's on the table. Is there any further discussion?
Call the question.
As a vote yes means to alter the language as indicated, does it need to be reread, anybody? No, good. Okay, so, Pete?
Yes.
Anna?
Okay, what does it mean? What do you
yes mean? So we add the language, the coordinating committee is not an executive committee and may not exercise powers of the board without board approval.
That's what a yes means?
That's right.
Yes.
Carol?
Yes. Oh. I'm having trouble hearing you, Dave. Are you on a speakerphone?
Yes. Does Janice yes? Carol?
Yes.
I vote yes. George?
I think yes.
Teresa?
Yes.
Is that a yes?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Jabbari?
No.
Okay, next.